This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, a game day on Monday night. The last time the Seahawks were in Philadelphia for a Monday night game, it was a 42-0 whomping, and it featured a defensive stalwart performance. We'll see if the Seahawks can make an encore, but now it's time to bring in Brock Heward for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
Good morning, gents. I'm doing good. When was that Monday night game, the last one? I think I was there, Danny. Was that in 2005?
That's correct.
Yes.
You were there. Yeah.
Yes, we were there. Yeah, we, for some reason, the Seahawk radio, that must have been like, was it December?
That's correct. Early
December.
There
you go. So it was December of 05, and it was kind of cold, windy. I remember that. And the Seahawks just slaughtered them. And I'll tell you one other thing that I remember from that game. Was sitting in our radio booth, like to the left of us was the Monday night booth or Sunday night. Was that a Monday night game? Monday night, obviously. You just said that Monday night game. And looking over there and realizing, man, Boomer Esiason and Al Michaels hate each other. They just hate each other. They won't even be in the room together. Like,
wow.
I think we had Boomer like on our radio pregame, and yeah, he was thankful for that, and like they just would not even coexist. Yeah, that was a bad, as much as I remember how bad Philly was, I remember how bad relationally, I was like, how do those guys even do the game? Like, they can't even look at each other. So
I will say this, I don't know any other people who dislike Al Michaels. Like, yeah. if you're going to look at what went wrong in that relationship, I don't know a lot of people who dislike Al Michaels.
I think we call that a you problem. That might be, you may have to look at, yeah, and I don't know Boomer that well. I've met him, I don't know, a handful of times. He's always been pleasant.
But people don't like him.
Yeah, he's pretty strong opinion. Pretty strong opinion.
We talked about one of those this season. Yeah, remember his take on Jamal Adams this
season. Oh, yeah,
So, Brock, question number one, a very simple and straightforward one. Why are the Eagles this disappointing?
Yeah, there's a few different reasons for it. I think number one is just their line of scrimmage is not what they were, is not what they were when they won the Super Bowl, where they were very, very good on the offensive line and dominant at times on that defensive line and just at the line of scrimmage. If you're a Philadelphia fan, that's been the most disappointing. You pay Carson Wentz, you want to keep growing and developing, and they've had a ton of injuries. They've had people leave and depart. And obviously on the perimeter, likewise, they've just had no stability really for 2 years here with Carson. He's not had DK and Tyler like Russell has had basically week in and week out for the last couple years. It's been nothing but a revolving door. It's been street free agents. It's been guys right off the practice squad that, they've tried to accelerate some of their growth and development. So, yeah, it has just been a bunch of stops and starts. And what's challenging, Paul, is they've got actually a bunch of the pieces that you look for stability. They've got an owner that's committed to winning. They've got a GM that I think has been executive of the year. Howie Roseman's done a nice job. You've got Doug Peterson, head coach. You've got your young quarterback. Like, you've got those four pillars that usually lead to stability and lead to more success. And, even last year, they still made the playoffs amidst all those injuries, and they still very much have a chance. And I think if I were a betting man in looking at the rosters, I would say, yeah, you should win the NFC East this year, even if it is with six wins. So, kind of long-winded answer there. They've got pieces of stability, but I just think at the line of scrimmage, it has just been a turnstile.
I agree with you, Brock, about kind of, you asked me which of those four NFC East teams is best, given that Dak Prescott's out, and I tell you that Philadelphia. I get the feeling, though, that Seattle's toughest game in these next 4 weeks is going to be against the Giants at home, because the Giants are actually playing together, and for all of the hokiness, and I didn't think Joe Judge's system was going to work, I think they're actually playing like a team, whereas I think the Eagles are coming apart.
That's interesting. I thought I would actually, and maybe this is just total recency bias of watching the Washington football team Thursday, But actually, matchup-wise, their defensive line can rush four and impact the game, and they've got some monsters there. And that young running back is an explosive, explosive guy. Obviously, Alex is a little bit limited, but he doesn't hurt you, right, and usually give games away. And those are the kind of matchups that, you know, against the Seahawks especially, and I think that one is in Washington, right? The Seahawks got to go to Washington. So that, to me, is the one. Daniel Jones looks like he's maybe tore his hamstring. He's probably out, so you're at least going to get a backup in Colt McCoy coming all the way, you know, west to Seattle and all of that. So, yeah, you know, I think each of these have their own little pitfalls, but tonight – you got to make sure that you get after that offensive line. Tonight, Carlos Dunlap and Puna and Jaron and those guys that took a step forward a week ago against Arizona, they got to take another step. And they got to be right in the face of Carson Wentz. They got to breathe on him. They got to claw at him. They got to impact him. And if they can do that, obviously he's been prone to so many giveaways this year.
Yeah, somebody else texted in. Daniel Jones got hurt, Danny. Do you honestly think that makes him worse? Like, honestly.
Colt McCoy?
Honestly. What? Look,
I like Colt McCoy, actually.
Yeah, like, do you
he's
think?
Still in the
do
league.
You think,
good for him.
Do you think they're worse? I would have lost that bet. If you had asked me yesterday, was Colt McCoy still in the league? I would have lost that bet. Question two. All right, Brock. We look at these Seattle Seahawks. There's no excuses, right? There's no excuse. They have to win this game. If they're any good, they win this game.
If they want to win this division and be the number one seed, although Saints got gifted a win yesterday, then yes, you have to win this game tonight. Yes. And, you know, you are a whole lot healthier than you have been the last month. Your best corner is back. Your best running back's back. Your center is back. Those I know that Shell, your right tackle, is out. I think you can assist him with a Will Disley and some help there with the tight end position on the right side. So, yeah, this is one that I think the pieces fall, and you know, the league, you know, it is tough week in and week out. You'd probably say the same thing, Danny. I could imagine Burns and Gambo on Friday down in Arizona going, hey, man, if Arizona wants to win the division, if they want to be a playoff team, then you got to go to New England and beat, you know, a battered-up New England team that is not explosive and find a way to win, and they didn't. And they did not make the plays, and they missed a field goal, and they couldn't finish that game out. Well, if you're the Rams, you got to beat the 49ers. You haven't beat the 49ers in three tries in 2 years. You got to beat them at home, coming off wins with Seattle and Tampa. You got to beat up Nick Mullins, the guy scared to death back there, right? I mean, you got to win that game if you're going to win the division and be the number one seed. And they start slow and don't have enough in the tank to finish. So, I mean, it's the beauty of the NFL. This is no gimme tonight. This is not an easy one. The Eagles are absolutely backs against the wall. Their quarterback is under heat. Their quarterback is talented, has shown that he can be as talented as any player in the league at the position. He really can. He's also shown you he can be as bad as anybody in the league at that position. So I don't think this is a gimme by any means tonight. I don't know what the point spread is, but, you know, this feels like a one-possession kind of Seahawk win in the fourth quarter.
Shaquille Griffin expected to be back in this. Excuse me, he will be back in this game. And Brock, if you look at the defense and what they were able to do last week against the Cardinals, definitely promising. But do you expect them to keep it up, given what we have seen from them a lot of this year, in particular a wretched performance against Jared Goff, who looked quite wretched himself yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a primetime game. This team usually is up for those. You know, these East Coast trips, they are no joke. You know, we watched the Seahawks. I watched them up close and personal, you know, traveling and doing everything you got to do in 2020 and testing and the challenges of traveling and across the country and the Rams, you know, laid an egg in Miami. The Rams laid an egg in Buffalo. You know, the Seahawks laid an egg, obviously, in Buffalo. You know, so this is yet again another of those kind of East Coast trips. This one's a little easier. It's at night. This one's a little easier. It's in prime time. This is usually the game that Tyler or DK or Chris or Russ, those guys love, even Bobby, love the bright lights and the stage of Monday Night Football. So, you know, there's many things pointing, I think, in a positive direction tonight, Paul, but you got to go out there and you've got to do it, man. The NFL is a humbling game. When you hear it said, it is hard to win on any Sunday, other than playing the Broncos with no quarterbacks yesterday. It is hard. It is hard to do that. And it's going to be, you know, a challenging game. Fletcher Cox loves this matchup. He has owned this matchup in the middle of the line. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing, I think, a better Seahawk crew. And Damian Lewis matched up, and Ethan Posick matched up against him. And they got to handle him and handle Brandon Graham. And, you know, just play their game. And, if you know, they play to their standard, and play their best, yes, I think they should have a win, but it's not going to be easy tonight.
You can hear that Brock's the son of a coach and how much he resists. The Seahawks should win this game, Brock. They
blow
really
out.
Should.
They you
should
know
just destroy them. They should. If they don't, there's problems. They should kill this team.
Death, destruction,
terror, and mayhem. Brock with the chuckle. It's not that easy, fellas. It's a little more complicated than that. I will like to see Ethan Posick. Who would have thought we would say this? This might be the most unexpected sentence I will say in the year 2020. I'm really glad Ethan Posick's back.
You didn't like Mankind getting driven on his booty?
Nah.
Little Joey Hunt. You didn't like that little matchup with Fletcher?
No, that was. It really felt like Fletcher Cox was going to pick up little Joey Hunt by his belt buckle and just take him wherever he wanted to go.
Yep.
Just like, here, we're gonna pack it around. I'm really glad Ethan Posick's back for this game.
I'm really glad Chris Carson's back tonight, man. Chris Carson's got 6 weeks left. He got 6 weeks in the regular season and then hopefully a few, if not three or four, in a playoff run to say, okay, you know, this is what I mean to you guys. This is who I am. This is, you know, what I can do for you, and you know, down this stretch run, I'm more than healthy now. I've been given more than adequate time to heal up a sprained foot, and it's time to stay healthy. It's time to be available, to be responsible, and show the difference that he can make, because it just feels like, you know, kind of a cool, I don't know what kind of weather they're forecasting. I know there's some weather that came into Pittsburgh. We'll see if it's going to come into Philly tonight and what kind of conditions you're going to have. But, man, this just smells like a number 32, fresh legs, getting it going and showing his impact tonight as well.
Give it to Christopher. Don't shit on Cosette. Question three. Brock, we watched a lot of other NFC contenders this weekend. What did you learn about those teams?
Yeah, I think the Saints are the most balanced team offensively and defensively out there. And by the way, if you're wondering, it is actually going to be kind of a warm night in Philadelphia tonight. Looks like some rain showers, but low 60s with some drizzle. So before the cold front comes in, it actually is going to be kind of almost abnormally warm for late November. I think the Saints are still the most balanced and best team. That when I look at their front seven, their corners, you've got Pro Bowlers, if not all pros, Cameron Jordan, at every single level of that defense. Lattimore, the corner, is just becoming one of the big studs in the league at that position. Offensive line, you've got Pro Bowlers, if not all pros, and Ramchek. I'm thinking Drew Brees, his lungs going to heal and his ribs are going to heal, and actually a little bit of a month-long rest period in the middle of the season may benefit him. Down the stretch, Michael Thomas looks back. I think Alvin Kamara is one of the top three backs in the league. So, yeah, I just don't see another roster in the NFC, Paul, that has as much depth of talent at every position group and at every level of their team as do the New Orleans Saints. Now, if it's Taysom Hill that's going to continue to run the show, then he's obviously very, very limited as a passer, and they're not nearly as good as when Drew is healthy and when Drew is feeling good and when Drew is able. And I would think if you're Drew Brees, you also know window of opportunity, this is it. This is it before I go off into the broadcasting world, and I've got as good a roster, as balanced a roster as anybody. Got 8 wins now in the bank, and more than likely will probably be, if not the one seed, going to be right up there. So that, to me, is still the most dangerous animal in the NFC.
It's the exact same story we've heard about the Saints for the past 3 years. Best roster in the NFC.
Yep.
And we believe that when they get there, we'll see if it's any different, because quarterback in the last 2 years, I would argue, has done them in. The referees certainly cost them a victory, but they had other chances to win that game against the Rams and couldn't do it. That is Blue 42, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. I've long had a theory and a belief that why not have a backup quarterback who's an option-type quarterback, somebody who couldn't make it as an every down, that if you lose your starter, you're going to go to an inferior backup anyway, and you might as well just get in somebody that plays kind of like Taysom Hill plays, that would give you as good a chance to win, and it might actually be tougher for the opponents to prepare for. After watching the past 2 weeks, I no longer believe that, Brock.
Yeah.
watching that Broncos-Saints game, you're like, if you don't have the threat of throwing the ball effectively, like, NFL defenses will kill you.
Yes,
like,
they will.
Just absolutely. Like, when they were putting Freeman, because the first couple plays where Freeman or Lindsey were running essentially a wildcat offense, you're like, oh, this looks okay. And like, oh, two adjustments later, they can't do anything.
No, those guys, it was tackling practice. It was just dummies. Like, okay, pin the ears back. And yeah, when there was no threat of it at all. And yeah, quite a statement by the NFL to Denver as well. Like, you know, this is, I was listening to a lot of commentary on that. Had that been Tom Brady in Tampa or Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City in a room without some masks on, would they have handled and treated those players and those teams the same way they treated Denver?
No way. No way. They did it because it's a team that's not going to make the playoffs.
Yep.
And there's a legitimate reason they're doing it, which is, look, more people are testing positive, and the way to prevent the spread, once even if people who test positive are in your team, is for everybody to wear masks and socially distance.
Yep.
It was a purpose pitch that was thrown at the Broncos to say, this is how seriously we take it.
Yes, and sorry, Broncos, you're 3-6, and you've not been relevant in 5 years, and it's kind of like the Seahawks with Brian Billick on a Sunday game with Fox where they decided to try to play some music during the game underneath the Seahawks.
God, like, they did do that.
Yes, they did. Yeah, but when you're that irrelevant and you're not in the playoff picture and you've been that bad for year after year after year after year, guess what? You get to be the example. And that's exactly what they got. And thankfully, Fox realized, you know what, playing opera music or whatever, symphony underneath the game, probably not going to work. Let's not do this.
Brock, we love talking to you, and we will catch up with you tomorrow when we react to the Seahawks, who really should win in Philadelphia tonight.
Sounds great, boys. Go Hawks.
That is Brock Heward. Did you see that? I mean, I don't have any doubts that if that had been a good team, it would have been handled differently. And from that respect, I can get the Broncos or other people being like, look, you're making an example out of us. And the answer is, yeah, you're right. That doesn't mean the example is wrong. That doesn't mean it's not fair, but life's not fair.
Look at the Ravens, though, as that example. I mean, they've moved that game from Thanksgiving to Tuesday. They've moved that almost a full week, and Baltimore is going to get to play. Baltimore only down one quarterback for this one, Lamar Jackson. They have Robert Griffin III, who would start for Baltimore, assuming that they play the game tomorrow. Though the problem for Baltimore has been that they're not 100% sure that the outbreak is done.
Right, and that there are two different – it's worth pointing out. There are two different issues going on there. In Baltimore, you have the virus spreading within the locker room.
The whole team.
And it can be traced through the strength and conditioning coach who a week before that Thanksgiving game tested positive.
Was not
wearing a mask, was showing symptoms, didn't tell anybody. Other people started getting sick. You had two running backs. And basically, over the past week, they've had 10 players now. The NFL is not going to let them play until they believe there's no longer an active outbreak, that more people who had caught it from this transmission chain. And in Denver, it was, there was somebody that tested positive, and hey, these people were in close contact with him and were not wearing masks. We're worried that he infected them. We're not going to give them a chance to infect other people, so they can't play right now until we know for sure that they didn't catch it from that dude. But yeah, you mentioned Lamar Jackson, who is one of the players who's tested positive. He's last year's MVP, and I don't want to say he's having a bad season. He's certainly not having a great season. He's not playing like a Pro Bowler right now. Carson Wentz was almost the MVP. If he doesn't get hurt in 2017, he's the NFL MVP. He's not even playing like a starting quarterback right now. It's interesting when you see quarterbacks who have an extremely high peak and then drop off compared to those like Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson who continue to progress and are able to sustain that level of success. Because I'm not sure with Carson Wentz you would have been able to see that this coming. And maybe some of it's chalked up to injury, but the other part is that you can't assume that a quarterback gets better. You can't even assume that quarterback stays as good as he is when they have a breakthrough moment.
I wonder what the cause is, and I have been trying to think of why it hasn't maybe worked for Wentz. Is it a symptom of asking a quarterback to do a lot early on? Maybe that's the case with Wentz, because over time, it feels like people have a pretty good feel for what he is. He's going to hold on to the football for a long time. He doesn't have very good receivers around him, and he doesn't have a very good offensive line around him, so it's going to be difficult for him to beat you. When you look at Jackson, that offense has not evolved from year to year, and when that doesn't happen, it's going to be easy for teams to find a fix for you. As far as other quarterbacks that have not had that issue, as you mentioned, Russell Wilson. With Russell, there was a steady progression from him being entirely a game manager in 2012 I know that you and Jerry Brewer used to talk about what would happen if Russ does not follow to the plan 100%, right?
Scissors would come out and the courage would be removed
yes,
from the offense.
Yes, the courage.
Like, rein it in. The Gonna's got to come in.
Right.
Got to come in.
And over time, he's gotten better and better with it. And he has been asked to do more and more until this year. I mean, he was asked to do a lot. But now all of a sudden, you're dialing it back a little bit. Mahomes seems to be the one exception where you can just do whatever he wants. And my goodness, you watch that game against the Bucks or any week, it feels like he is Vladimir Putin playing hockey because no one seems like they're allowed to hit him or touch him. They don't even want to hit him. Like, they're scared of hitting him or something. It drives me crazy. I want someone to smack Mahomes at some point. But back to Carson Wentz. No Frank Reich anymore. And injuries. When you add those both up, that's a lot, I think, for any quarterback, no matter their skill set, to overcome. And I think now he is broken. And it's unfortunate. I really thought in 2017, and there's a reason that I clung to this for as long as I did. I mean, as you mentioned, he was going to be the MVP in 2017, and he tears his ACL running for a touchdown against the Rams. And since then, injuries and more injuries and more injuries. And I can see how that would make a quarterback think a little bit differently back there, be a little bit more careful. But I don't know what you do to fix it. And I would say in the case of Lamar Jackson, I would say in the case of Jared Goff too, how you get out of all of a sudden the gradual fall back to, I guess, average play that all of those quarterbacks seem destined for, I don't know how you stop that tailspin.
If a quarterback depends on the coach, if the quarterback's success depends on the coach, how talented is the quarterback? I get the idea that changing offensive coordinators can derail a quarterback. Like when a guy goes through, hey, you've had four offensive coordinators in your 5 years in the league, and that never really got a chance to get going. But if it's really as simple as Frank Reich leaving, if it's really that as simple as that, was the quarterback that good to begin with?
That's a good question, but I mean, look at Tom Brady with Bruce Arians. Clearly, there's a disconnect. And to the point where at his press conference, and we actually have the audio of this, where at his press conference, Brady was asked about his relationship with Bruce Arians.
Hey, Tom, as you guys head to your bye week, there's been some folks that have had some chatter about, you know, you still look like you're running someone else's offense. One of your former teammates even said on TV that he thinks that you need a new head coach. What do you make of all that noise?
No, it's just the external noise that when you're losing, you know, that's what you deal with. So, you know, I love playing for the guys that I play with, the coaches, the whole organization's been unbelievable. And I think we just got to go out and I certainly have to do a better job the last 4 weeks of the year. So appreciate it. Just have a good week.
2-minute press conference came to a screeching halt with that. And I think that's part of what's going on there. It's a different offense and all of a sudden he has to pick it up. Now, I don't know that with Doug Peterson in charge of everything and going away from Frank Reich that they have all of a sudden reinvented the wheel. So I don't know if it's as simple as that. But I do think that a different coach, can affect how a quarterback operates.
I have no idea why Brady chose to go to the Bucs.
I don't either.
It seemed weird to me when he picked it because I would not have identified him as a quarterback that suits Arians' offense, which likes guys with big arms that can throw the ball downfield. That's never been Tom's forte. If there's any problem with the offense, I assume that Tom knew something I didn't know because of his big football brain, because he was a big, smart quarterback. And maybe he didn't, because it looks an awful lot like he's in an offense that is not catered to his skill set. That question was terrible. What do you think about the noise? One of your former teammates said that he needs a new head coach.
And other folks.
Ask the question. Don't ask him to talk about what other people are saying. Ask the question. Hey, Tom, this looks like you're uncomfortable in this offense. Are you having an issue with what's being called? Hey, Tom, this offense doesn't look like it suits your skill set. Is it different than you imagined when you signed here? Actually ask him a question about it. And look, a lot of people are getting into the Tom Brady's a poor sport. Tom Brady walks off the field without shaking the other quarterback's hand. I wasn't aware that that was a requirement. I wasn't aware that the quarterback had to go shake the other quarterback's hand as some sort of sign. I didn't know that there were papal protocols to be followed when you lose as the greatest quarterback of all time.
I have no problem with somebody being livid to the point of not wanting to talk with anybody after a loss. And I'm hoping that is how Carson Wentz will be feeling at the end of tonight's game, a game where we could potentially see him supplanted by Jalen Hurts. And we're going to keep on beating this drum. there is no excuse for the Seahawks to lose tonight, and I feel like we are in store for a feast, a blowout, if you will.
What are we going to see, and what do the Seahawks need to do? We'll tell you next on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
For the past month, the Seahawks have survived. They've gone through the toughest stretch of their schedule. They played three teams that made the playoffs last year. Every one of their last five opponents had a winning record at the time. Three of those games were on the road. They've gone through a rash of injuries that started in the secondary, spread to their running backs. They've survived. Now, Paul, I think it's really a chance to see if they can thrive. Because if they're going to be a serious contender, they need to thrive here over these next five games.
You have to put back-to-back weeks together where the defense is a plus unit. I'm not even saying dominant. Because if you are not able to do that, you are not running the gauntlet in the NFC playoffs. Likely, you will have to play three games to get to a Super Bowl. There's a chance you could get the one seed. You are in a very rare conversation with New Orleans and Green Bay right now as far as teams that actually have the potential to do that. But it starts with putting together consistent defensive performances. The accountability meeting that they had after that awful, awful performance against the Rams, maybe it got them trending in the right direction. And at the end of that game, the defense was playing better. But it starts there, Danny, and it's great that there's some health coming back. Shaquille Griffin should be a massive reinforcement for this defense.
Yeah, it should build on what you're putting together, right? It should build on adding Carlos Dunlap to the front, which has helped the defense. It should add to the linebackers, and specifically Jordan Brooks really starting to make an impact, and now it should stabilize the secondary, which we thought was going to be a strength coming into the season. And has been the biggest weakness. Now, they've been without Jamal Adams for a huge chunk of this. They missed him for about half the games. But you need to get better. Like, that's the unit. This isn't about Seattle making the playoffs. At this point, I would consider it to be a colossal failure if Seattle didn't make the postseason. This is about positioning yourself in the playoffs, and it's about being a legitimate Super Bowl threat. It's about being a team that can legitimately make the Super Bowl, and it's not like maybe our quarterback will get hot and we'll win three straight games and get to the... It's about being a team that feels that, hey, we've got as good a shot as anybody in this conference at getting to the Super Bowl.
And what's perfect about this upcoming four-game stretch, which starts tonight against a wounded Eagles team, is that this gives you the ability to go back to fundamentals. There really isn't an offense that you will face over the next 4 weeks that's going to seriously challenge you. It's not going to be tonight with Carson Wentz, at least I think. It's not going to be with likely Colt McCoy and the New York Giants, not with Sam Darnold, Adam Gase and the Jets, and with whoever's under center for Washington football team as well. Alex Smith, I would assume, would be the guy. This is a stretch for you where you don't have to do anything complicated. You don't have to do anything that's super fancy. This is just, hey, let's make sure that we don't get beat deep. Let's keep everything on top, and let's find a way to consistently generate a pass rush, which for the last 3 weeks, since adding Carlos Dunlap, the Seahawks have done a great job of. 13 sacks over 3 weeks. That's second in the NFL. That's a really promising sign, and I think it's going to continue tonight against Philadelphia, and I think that might be the calling card, Danny, for the defense the rest of the way.
The next four opponents have a combined record of 11-31-1.
Is that bad?
It's terrible.
I like the tie.
That was thanks to these Eagles you're playing tonight. You've got a three-win Eagles team. You've got a four-win Giants team. You've got a four-win football team in Washington, and then the winless Jets. Like this is the time to make hay, right? This is the time where you should be able to dig in and absolutely build some momentum heading into that Week 16 game. And it's always hard to say, hey, you should win four in a row. They should win four in a row. They should win these next four games. Two of them are at home. Nobody has a winning record. And that should put you in a really strong position going into the stretch. That said, this defense hasn't played well enough that I think anybody should be comfortable saying, like, oh, they got this is they should win them. But that's presuming that they continue to build on what we saw in that last game against Arizona.
There were some interesting comments made by Seahawks safety Jamal Adams when asked a question by, I think it was Joe Fan, about his play in coverage recently. Here is Jamal Adams' rather defensive response to that.
I've had one bad play versus Diggs, Stephon Diggs versus the Bills, and I went from, you know, being one of the guys that can take away all the tight ends to all of a sudden can't cover. So to answer your question, brother, you know, I'm fine, man. I'm doing fine in coverage. I haven't been in a lot of man situations, believe it or not. But, you know, things can change, and I'm looking forward to those things changing.
Can I pull that off? I mean, I might adopt that. Well, to answer your question, brother, I want that. That is mine now. Thank you, Jamal. I'm taking it.
Was it like, okay, I've explained the context that you were missing in your initial inquiry, and I would like you to explain. The funny thing is, I know exactly which play he's talking about with Diggs. And it's where he lined up on him, in the slot, failed to get a jam on him, got turned inside, and then was completely lost as Diggs went to the outside. I want to see their secondary get better. And to me, that's not singling out Jamal Adams. That's talking about the overall play in the secondary. That was the group that we thought would be a plus. We thought that the secondary would be a group that took a major step forward. The linebackers were established. The secondary would take a step forward, and the defensive line was supposed to be the question mark. Instead, the defensive line right now looks like it's getting better. The linebackers are good, and now we're worried about the secondary. And so if it's not Jamal Adams' individual man-to-man coverage, if it's not his coverage, then it's the understanding of how they're playing their zones, right? Like that's what it would lead me to believe. His answer there would be it is an understanding of how they play their zones and how they work together there.
And that goes back to that dramatic fundamentals meeting that they had. For whatever reason, they were down with everything that they needed to do against the Cardinals. And I think one of the guys that you can really focus on as having a, I think, really good game, when we haven't seen this a whole lot from him, is one of my favorite Seahawks. It's Quandre Diggs. I loved what I saw from Quandre Diggs in that Thursday game against Arizona, and I'm hoping that guy is going to be more unlocked. Because here's the thing with Jamal Adams. I'm not going to criticize Jamal Adams for coverage because I don't expect coverage from Jamal Adams. I don't. Yes, he's going to be matched up against tight ends from time to time. I understand his defensiveness, but I also look at him, and I think to myself, that's not a guy who's a cover guy. He is I am going to make plays by essentially freelancing in the box and coming after the quarterback a lot. Quandre Diggs is the guy that needs to be making plays on the back end. It can't just be Shaquille Griffin occasionally doing something. You need to have a safety that's a lot like the last safety that you had that was awesome in that role, Earl Thomas. And maybe it's
that's
an unfair
such
expectation.
A high bar, though. That's such a high bar. Earl's a Hall of Fame player.
He is. I think Diggs is a smart enough player, though, to do some of the same things that Earl was doing. Again, you're not getting any of the same Legion of Boom. It seemed with Shaquille Griffin. Like he's no Richard Sherman, but you need those guys to be more than just caretakers who essentially are making sure things don't get past them. They have to make plays back there, especially if the pass rush all of a sudden steps up. That is likely going to mean, if they're blitzing as much as they are, some open spaces in front of them. It can't just be a matter of they're going to make the catch and fall down in front of one of these defensive backs. These defensive backs maybe have to be a little more aggressive and I hate to say take risks, but because that doesn't seem to be consistent with Pete Carroll's defense, but they cannot just sit back and let things happen in front of them.
See, that's what I want to see. I want to see the corners get up on guys. I don't want to see 15-yard cushions. I want to see them get up and trust that they're going to be able to jam and turn and run with guys. I think the safety play is they'll get the safety play they need in the middle. I think it's on the outside, the numbers. That's where I would like to see the most of their improvement. And what I think has been the biggest problem, not the whole season, but over these past 5 weeks. Because we talked about that stretch of schedule they survived, that Seattle survived. Let's look at it. They gave up 37 points to Arizona, and that was in an overtime game. The next week they beat San Francisco. The 49ers scored 27 points in that game. Then came the game against Buffalo, which was the bottoming out, right? 44 points. It's the most points that the Seahawks have ever allowed under Pete Carroll. They come back home, or I'm sorry, they go to Los Angeles the next week, and the Rams score on their first three possessions. Like that right there, that is the low point, or we hope is the low point for this defense. And what epitomized the difficulty against first the Bills and then that start against the Rams was that just nobody was on anybody.
No.
Whether it was Quentin Dunbar was banged up and couldn't be playing, but nobody was up covering anybody. And you have to do that. You have to be able, and maybe that's the trick or the difficulty for the cornerbacks in this defensive scheme is that you can't You can't get beat deep, but you can't play that off of guys.
Exactly.
Like you have to be able to turn and run with them.
And it's contract time for Shaquille Griffin. So you got to prove that you're one of those cornerbacks, whether to get a contract here, and I think the Seahawks would definitely be interested in bringing him back, or elsewhere. It's time for you to prove that you're not just a guy who's in this defense who is just there. You have to, as you said, Danny, play up, stay with these guys, and you haven't had him the last 4 weeks. Maybe there is a commonality there, though the defensive struggles definitely date back further than this past stretch. And honestly, given that the accountability meeting that they supposedly had that was so dramatic before that Cardinals game, I think you're going to need to have another one of those because for Griffin, he hasn't been there for a month, and that might be a bit of an adjustment period for him too tonight.
It is Danny and Gallant. Before the Seahawks take on the Eagles, it's time to separate the wheat from the chaff, to distinguish the hot takes from the hard truths. That's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Happy Blue Monday. Seahawks Eagles tonight in Philadelphia.
Why does Blue Monday feel pessimistic? Blue Friday does not. Yet when you said Blue Monday there, just the... it hit different.
Alhamdulillah, Blue Monday. I don't know. I started listening to Christmas music, by the way, this weekend. It is now set as part of the routine. Put up my Christmas tree. You got your Christmas tree up behind
you. I did.
You.
I cut down the Christmas tree. And in fact, in one of the more my wife, whom I love very dearly, and she puts up with an awful lot from me, she asked me when we were going to the Christmas tree farm before that, a few days before that, if I thought I'd be ready for it or if I was going to get tired. And it's fair for her not to expect very much from me because of my track record. However, that was honestly the most underestimated I'd ever felt.
Oh.
And how it came out, we had to buy our own saw. Like, we had the saw shipped to us because due to COVID, you can't be using community saws at the Christmas tree farm. The tree was cut down before she assembled her REI camping chair so she could sit and watch.
Nice.
The tree came down before she even got herself comfortable to witness the exertion that was required, and I felt more than a little accomplished about it.
So to make a reference to Christmas Vacation, you were the opposite of Clark Griswold. You were able to live up to the lofty expectations that you set for yourself as the son of a lumberjack.
That's right. We tied it to the roof, too, Griswold style.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, guys. The Seahawks play the Eagles tonight. We do this before every single Seahawks game. It's time to play Hot Take or Hard Truth. The Seahawks play the Philadelphia Eagles. And Paul's got a little game for you. Is it a hot take?
If Eagles are such tough birds, why aren't they endangered? Hashtag soft.
Or a hard truth? Carson Wentz looks like a soggy hoagie. I really like the way that Philadelphians say their O's. It's like an over-pronunciation.
It's related to the Baltimore accent, right?
Yes.
The Ballmer accent, where there's a little bit of O.
Oh.
It's a little more high-pitched. The traditional Ballmer accent is a little more high-pitched.
Buddy Ryan was once a coach on the Philadelphia Eagles staff. Rex Ryan is now a hot take artist for the S-Pen. Our mothership, and here is what he had to say about one Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz is garbage. Like, I watch him, I'm sitting back, you know, saying, I still like Carson Wentz. Man, he's playing so bad.
Is that a hot take or hard truth? Carson Wentz is garbage. It's a hard one to answer. Did we lose Danny? Or is he just brain busted?
We might have lost Danny.
Okay. Well, I'll answer this question. It's difficult. Oh, yeah, he's frozen. Look at that on the live stream. He's in the midst of a pensive thought. It's fantastic. If I were to answer this question honestly, first off, I don't like to use the word garbage, but there once was a time where I did. As someone in sports talk radio, when you're young, you sometimes throw that word out all willy-nilly. That is a really strong one to put out there. But he's been awful this year, and you can make excuses for him. His wide receiver core has been not good at best over the last couple of years. I mean, remember last season when the Seahawks played the Eagles and we were looking at Greg Ward Jr., a former college quarterback at the University of Houston, as some sort of godsend for Carson Wentz. They have a good running back in Miles Sanders, but they're also down their two their best tight end, Zach Ertz. He's been out for a while. This is a team that does not have any help around a quarterback who is broken. If we're going to be true to the word, and I hate saying this because I was such a Carson Wentz truther, to the point that Lydia Cruz actually bought me a Carson Wentz sticker to rub it in my face that Dak Prescott was better than him. And to her credit, I think that I have to admit that is now the case. And while that is a really strong term to call anyone, his play has been garbage this year. So you are how you play. I will answer that question, and I will say, yeah, garbage, trash. So Danny's power went out. Classic New York City. Am I right? Rationing power out. This is what happens when you live amongst 9 million or so people. So that's how I answer the first one. I guess I'm going to talk to myself in this segment. DJ, you can answer this. Is that a hot take or a hard truth? Garbage. Carson Wentz.
It's a hot take because I don't think Doug Peterson's like Adam Gase where we keep saying Sam Darnold needs to get away from the Jets. I think Carson Wentz needs to get away from Philly. I don't know how that happens, you know, with the contract and everything, but apparently Frank Reich did make a lot of a difference. Like a huge difference. Apparently he did. But also that also leads to what you guys were saying about a half hour ago. Then how good was Carson Wentz really originally? If it really comes down to Frank Reich, how good really is Carson Wentz? But to me, I want to see him somewhere in like Denver. I want to see him somewhere else. And we can then see, I think, how good he can be. Because he was really good in college. I know he was playing true Division I competition, but he was playing FCS competition. He was great.
They won 4 straight national titles. And I think, actually, they might have won a 5th one. He was there for the entire time. I mean, he was there, and he was really good in 2017. But everything has added up to just a really struggle fest since then. I feel like the Seahawks are going to have their way with him tonight because they have had, now, tonight, will have their 10th offensive line combination in 11 weeks. Jason Peters has never played right guard in his NFL career. He is moving to right guard. They're bringing in a new left tackle. They're bringing in a new right tackle. I mean, they're just throwing stuff at the wall. And he's been sacked 40 times this year. He has been sacked 33 times when holding the ball for longer than 4 seconds. It is a struggle for this guy. And I think I have to call him that. I hate to do it because I think with Rex, it's one of those things where I think he's just in stream of consciousness and it just comes out, but he has played like that. Hot take or hard truth? Doug Peterson is just another coach without Frank Reich. DJ, I will put you on the spot again.
It's a hard truth, and I hate to say that about the pride of Ferndale, Washington, but it baffles me, and it baffles you more, Paul, I bet, because he stared down Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl and thoroughly outcoached him in the Super Bowl. And it just baffles me that he was able to do that. And now we're seeing him without Frank Reich. I know they made the playoffs the next year, but oh my gosh, like I just feel like they're not developing any offensive talent. I know they don't really have, like they're getting injured a lot at the wide receiver position, but he's not developing anybody on the offensive side when he's supposed to be an offensive coach. I just think he's a very mediocre coach who might be just more of a program builder.
By the way, there's nothing wrong with being just another coach. You know, how many coaches are truly awesome without the support of their coaching staff? And I'll look at Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, as a defensive coordinator here with the Seahawks, there's definitely a track record of success. I do question his ability to build a defense, given what we saw in Atlanta over all of that time. But when he had Kyle Shanahan, I mean, that Falcons team was putting up historic numbers offensively. Without Kyle Shanahan, they are an above-average offense, a plus offense with a lot of talented weapons and a pretty good quarterback. Nothing wrong with being just another coach, but I think that Doug Peterson, yeah, he is just another coach. A last one, really quickly. Hot take or hard truth? The Philadelphia Eagles are still the best team in the NFC East. DJ, what sayeth thou?
On paper, they are, but I really like what I'm seeing from Washington.
You like Washington.
I kind of like Washington. I really like their defensive line. Chase Young's look great as a rookie. And you have Jonathan Allen. You have De'Aaron Payne. Their defensive line is great. I love the Antonio Gibson really takes the load off of Alex Smith's shoulders.
Yeah, that's not loving, but I get what you're saying. Like, he's actually good. Been good. He's been good.
He's a good rookie running back. And how Alex Smith has always done well in the leagues when he has a really good running game to fall back on. And Terry McLaurin's a great wide receiver as well. I just like Washington. I don't know why. Maybe that's, again, like recency bias. They just played Dallas on Thanksgiving. They made them look horrible. But I can't go with Dallas. I can't go with the Giants, especially because Daniel Jones might be out for, if not for the season, he's going to be out for a while. It might be an upgrade. I mean, Colt McCoy, we'll see if he can reclaim the glory days of the Texas Longhorns.
UT.
But we'll see. But I think Washington right now is the team playing the best.
I think you made the correct answer, and you sold me there. Washington's defense is playing really well. Philadelphia, I don't know what their calling card is. Like, they have talented players, and you're right. On paper, yeah, I think that's true. Carson Wentz, when healthy, he's the best quarterback left in this division. When healthy. But he is healthy right now. That offensive line's got some names. They're not all healthy. You can continue to make as many excuses as you want for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's where it comes down to. If you keep on making excuse after excuse after excuse on the outside looking in, eventually you have to say there's just something fundamentally wrong with them. And that's why the Seahawks should win this game handedly. Handily? Whatever. We'll work with both of them tonight. I'm Paul Gallant, Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. We will have Danny back in the next segment. Coming up next also, when you take a look at what happened in the NFL yesterday, things could not have gone better for the Seahawks. And now the question, I think, is, are they in a great position to potentially get the one seed in the NFC? We'll discuss that and more next.